You're listening to the Body Pros podcast coverage of CROI 2009, the 16th Conference on Retroviruses and Opportunistic Infections. The conference took place in Montreal, Canada, from February 8th through February 11th, 2009.
Welcome. This is Bonnie Goldman, Editorial Director of The Body Pro. Right now, I'm in the poster session where researchers are standing in front of their posters. There's nothing like hearing the results of research directly from those who have actually conducted the research. It is these women and men who are transforming HIV treatment and care. In this podcast, the researchers will introduce themselves and then summarize their study. After their summary, I'll ask a few questions.
My name is Kate Childs, and I've just recently been doing a master's at Mount Sinai School of Medicine, although I am a clinician looking after patients with HIV. This study is looking at the effect of varying doses of vitamin D supplementation on serum vitamin D level in a group of HIV-infected men from New York. We took a group of 72 men. We measured their vitamin D levels at baseline. A level of less than 30 nanograms per mil is defined as a suboptimal level of vitamin D.
What percentage of the men had suboptimal levels?
74%. In fact, 53% had a level of less than 20, which would be deficiency. The ones who had a suboptimal level were advised to start taking vitamin D3 and calcium citrate supplements. The dose that we recommended was based on their baseline value. The ones who were severely deficient with a level of less than 10 were advised to take a total of 2,800 IUs of vitamin D3 plus 1 gram of calcium citrate. The ones with a level of 10 to 20 were advised to take 1,800 units, and the ones with a level of between 20 and 30 were recommended to take 800 IUs of vitamin D3. As I said, everybody was advised to take 1 gram of calcium citrate as well.
Why was the calcium necessary?
Vitamin D and calcium are completely synergistic in their actions. Many people do not have enough calcium in their diet, so you're not going to see any type of benefit of vitamin D if you don't give calcium as well. The ones with a level in the optimal range were not advised to take any supplements, because obviously we thought they were already in the optimal range. We also stratified according to adherence. We asked men if they took the supplements never, sometimes, or always. So you can see that, unsurprisingly, the ones who always took the supplements had a significantly greater increase in their vitamin D level.
How did you arrive at the recommended doses?
It was just based on literature review. There's actually no data on this at all in HIV-positive patients, though I believe a paper's been published in the interim. So it was based on the recommendations of experts such as Michael Hollick, who's written extensively on vitamin D, and also on the observation that, in fact, many of our patients had already been taking doses of 400 IUs at baseline as part of a multivitamin supplement, and obviously that did nothing at all to help them avoid being vitamin D deficient. So in the subjects who reported complete adherence, we saw quite an increase. We saw an increase of 14.4 nanograms per mil. But it's important to say that even though they all had an increase, only 40% of them managed to get into the optimal range. So still, a lot of them did not. You can see that over here. So these are the individual patients, and once they cross that line, they're in the optimal range, but most of them still didn't manage to.
And why is that?
We don't know. It's fairly surprising. Obviously, there still could be adherence issues, even though they said that they'd take it all the time. But perhaps we need higher doses. Perhaps we need a longer duration of follow-up. The median duration of follow-up was 18 weeks.
It's once a day?
Yes, it was a once-a-day dose. The other thing that was quite interesting that we saw is vitamin D is made in the skin by the action of sunlight. So there is meant to be, and there's a well-observed increase in vitamin D levels in the summer, when obviously the sun is shining more. What we actually found is that patients who weren't advised to take supplements, so the ones who started off in that optimal range, actually experienced a decrease from winter to summer. So this chart shows the ones who were advised to take vitamin D supplements and the ones who were not advised, and this is the change in vitamin D. All the ones who were advised to take supplements had an increase, but in fact all the ones who weren't advised to take supplements had a decrease. That's quite an important point. So we feel strongly that clinicians should not be reassured when they measure someone's vitamin D level in the winter and they say, okay, it's a bit low, but in the summer it'll be fine. Our data doesn't support that. So we think clinicians need to be quite vigilant. In conclusion, we were giving high doses, doses that were many times greater than their adequate intake, but they were safe and they did not lead to hypercalcemia.
Is that the only risk of high dose of vitamin D?
Yes.
You checked that along the way?
Yeah, we monitored everyone's serum calcium levels. We found that basically it was safe, that it increased serum vitamin D levels, but that possibly either higher doses or a longer duration of follow-up are needed because the majority still did not make it into the optimal range. Also importantly, that clinicians should not assume that patients' levels will increase in the summer because we actually saw very minimal seasonal variation.
Tell me some of the benefits that are seen in optimal vitamin D. in someone who's HIV positive in particular?
Most of the literature is in patients who are not HIV positive. And I have to say there's a phenomenal wealth of data, mostly on a cross-sectional basis, showing an association of low vitamin D levels with more diabetes, more hypertension, more cardiovascular risk, more systemic inflammation, depression, fatigue, autoimmune diseases, cancers. Many cancers have been associated with low levels of vitamin D. In terms of HIV, there aren't many studies as yet showing that in HIV, but obviously all those outcomes I just described are extremely relevant and important in the context of HIV. So we think that patients with HIV infection probably have even more to gain than your average man on the street from having an optimal level of vitamin D. We think it's an easily modifiable parameter that could have a real health benefit.
And the inflammation is a big problem with HIV infected patients, and if you have low vitamin D levels, that could be a problem as well, right?
Precisely. I mean, inflammation is obviously one of the most important things that is being looked at in the context of HIV infection at the moment. Certainly, low vitamin D levels have been associated with increased systemic inflammation. So, yeah, we think vitamin D is probably very important for patients with HIV.
Are you going to be continuing looking at this? Is this going to be...
We are. We are hoping to do further follow-up measurements a year after they were initially advised to be given supplements, which obviously will remove the effect of seasonal variation to see if we manage to attain optimal vitamin D levels. We'll also be looking at other parameters, such as their PTH level and their calcium levels. So, yeah, we're going to carry on looking at this group of men.
Are you going to be looking at a better way to maybe deliver the supplements? Because if it didn't work for some people... That's kind of an issue.
It's difficult. It is very difficult. I think we have to make sure that we've optimised the study in terms of adherence and in terms of duration of follow-up. Because obviously we don't want to just be throwing bigger and bigger doses of vitamin D at people and then risk developing hypercalcemia in a small number. I certainly think that the vitamin D3 supplementation, which is what we used, is the actual supplement that's shown to be the most potent and also the one that's least likely to cause hypercalcemia, because other forms of vitamin D can cause hypercalcemia more readily than this.
What vitamin D supplement did you recommend to patients?
We had to recommend that they just go out and purchase it, which was unfortunately a constraint. We would have loved to be able to prescribe it.
So it could be varying doses, because not all vitamins have what they are supposed to have. It's an unregulated business.
That's absolutely true. So we recommended that they take the certain dose of calcium citrate and a certain dose of vitamin D. But you're right, that's a limitation.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
The opinions expressed by hosts or interviewees in this podcast do not constitute professional advice, should not be considered substitutes for professional services, and do not necessarily represent the opinions of Body Health Resources Corporation or its sponsors. Please see the full disclaimer online at thebodypro.com. If you have comments or questions, please contact us.
Thank you for listening to this report from CROI 2009. For more coverage of this conference, visit us online at thebodypro.com/CROI2009.